It is the busiest day of the baseball season, at least for me and Jordan.
It is. We have a draft we are still recovering from, at least night one. We have All-Star Media Day coming up, and of course, the Home Run Derby tonight. We're going to recap the draft, preview the Derby, and so much more on this episode of Baseball Barbercast.
Also, the A's scored 18 runs again. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world who believes that the Home Run Derby should be at Churchill Downs. Double down on that derby. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman.
Can I wear a funny hat?
Tonight?
Yeah.
We should dress up to the Home Run
Derby. No?
Yeah, we're for the Derby.
For the Derby.
Can I have one mint julep, please?
I'm pretty sure the dress code will be a little bit different, but I am very excited. Home Run Derby, one of our favorite nights of the year. Good morning, Jake. It is Monday.
Yeah.
We have already been here in Dallas, Fort Worth, where we're recording this, for a few days.
We have not stepped foot in Dallas.
No, and we might not, to be honest. But Arlington, we will be back. All-Star Media Day coming up. That is this afternoon, and of course, the Home Run Derby tonight. But last night, we were at the Cowtown Coliseum for night one of the draft. First half of the show, we're going to be recapping the draft. But before we get to all the All-Star stuff, let us quickly acknowledge the end of the first half, quote-unquote, of the regular season. Not going to do a long discussion, but yes, we did see what happened in the Orioles and Yankees games. Yes, we pulled up the standings and we were like, wait, the Pirates are at 500? Yes, we saw that the A's scored 18 runs for the third time this season. No other team has scored 18 runs once this season, and the A's have done it three times. So there was some compelling stuff going on, and we caught some glimpses. But any other big takeaways from the end of the first half?
I want to talk about Rhys Hines very quickly.
Yeah.
Doing the Aquino.
I mean, this is, yeah, to the point where... And it's almost a shame that the break is here, because now he like has to cool off. It sucks that he has to go sit at home for 5 days. That really is unfortunate, right? Because Aquino's hot stretch happened at the end of August into September. This is like, he's the last person that wants a break.
The best part of hot stretch is when you're nuts like us and you have every single home run notification on your phone.
I don't anymore, but I used to. But yeah.
I still do.
Yeah.
And when you just see... Oh, Rhys Hines, Cincinnati Reds, home run.
And you're like, wait, is that a mistake? Is this a Twitter glitch?
Oh, and like we're sitting at dinner and I just like push my phone to you and it just says Rhys Hines. Like that's
and that's that feeling when I did have every home run pushed to my phone, especially in 2019, which that was every 30 seconds. I just remember Aquino every time it was like, no way.
No way. Like,
there's no way this is another one. And that's where Rhys Hines.
The incredulousness.
Has got to. Yes.
It's the incredulousness of the whole thing is what makes it so good. Because like when Judge goes on a heater Schwarber goes on a heater, it's like, yes. Indeed.
We also had a mini version of that yesterday with 2-3 homer games from Michael Tolia and Lawrence Butler in the A's in that romp. And I encourage people to look at Michael Tolia's triple slash line, one of the goofiest of the season. But yeah, anything else? Quickly, we should do Orioles-Yankees quickly before we move on.
Oh.
Wow. Wow.
Oh.
There's a lot. There was a lot going on there. I will just say our wonderful producer, Andrew Hartz, who is in the room here, Yankees fan, of course.
Yep.
We won't ask him to speak up. He probably doesn't want us to even bring this up. But
well,
remember, you know, we asked Andrew last week, we were talking about, oh, who's going to be the third best hitter in the Yankees the rest of the season? He said emphatically, Ben Rice. He felt great about that.
Seven letters, no problems.
Right. And I was like, hell yeah, should be the right attitude. And when Ben Rice hit that home run off Craig Kimbrell.
Three-run go-ahead shot in the top of the ninth.
We got quite an excited text from our dear friend Andrew here. He was in the group text.
He was a little bit more quiet at the end of the following frame.
Well, I was not watching the game. So I saw Ben Rice. I looked at the game day. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, good for Ben Rice. Like, good. Like, that's I'm happy with that. I was like, oh, man, the Yankees are going to sweep the Orioles. I was like, oh, my gosh. Yeah. Like, this is not looking good for Baltimore.
But you did not account
for All-Star Clay Holmes.
Midsummer Clay Holmes. Play the music. Play the Chris Stapleton.
I don't think they were playing that in Baltimore. But whatever the reason, Clay Holmes and his friend, I would just say, this was
a team effort.
A team effort. Listen, usually you'll hear this after
a win.
After a win. Listen, everyone stepped up. You know, everyone came. Everyone stepped down for the Yankees in this one.
Everyone stepped down, and Alex Verdugo literally fell down. The Orioles walk off the Yankees. Yeah. If you haven't watched these highlights, They are just very singular. I have to be, I'm going to be honest. I feel bad for Anthony Volpe.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in like sympathy mode for Volpe
for sure.
Right now. After making that big error, and you know a guy is not like doing great when they make a big error and they immediately look at the dirt. And he looks at the dirt and he like fixes a hop and he's like, it's like, nope, it wasn't the ground, my good sir. It wasn't your glove.
But then speaking of sympathy and maybe say, oh, who cares, whatever. Man, Clay Holmes is, I guess, now going to show up here as an all-star and everyone's going to be like, he'll be like, just go talk to Judge and please. And I don't know. It just seems
because he's going to have to answer questions about being bad at the All-Star game, which is like really unfortunate and no one wants to do that, but you have to ask the questions.
Right.
If I'm Clay Holmes, I'm faking like hand, foot, and mouth disease or something. Yeah. And just not coming. Like, oh, I have the chicken pox.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, whatever. Clay Holmes seems like a nice guy, but could be a tough week for him here.
Last thing.
I will say this. Probably won't be pitching in the All-Star game. Hopefully he'll just be hanging out in the bullpen, just getting kind of resetting there. Anyway, those are the main things. Anything, just looking at the standings, any other takeaways? I mean, we were kind of looking at the National League expecting, oh, maybe we can start to get some clarity going into the break, and the opposite of that, right? The Pirates finished on W4. They're back at 500. The Reds, who had this 10-game homestand against bad teams. Oh, could they win 7, 8, 9 of those games? No, they go 5-5. So they're still 3 games under. Cubs played a little bit better at the end of the first half, so they're still only 3.5 back.
I love what the Pirates did this week, which was play the White Sox.
Hey, you just play who's on your schedule, and they took advantage there. And then the other thing is, we finally have a non-Padres team. The Padres fall out of that third wild card spot. The Cardinals and Padres have kind of been occupying those for a while. Now the Mets kind of jump in there. I mean, it's still one game, so no significant thing. And then, anything else in the NL?
No, I mean, we'll preview the whole second half on Friday is kind of going to be our plan. I would say in the American League, I'm ready to shovel dirt on the Tigers, Rangers, and Blue Jays.
Yes, Tigers won 8 of their last 10, but they're still 7 back. So obviously they had a nice finish against the Dodgers with some really dramatic wins that we would talk about more if we weren't about to talk about the draft for 20 minutes. But I think I agree with you, but them and the Rangers did play pretty well down the stretch.
All right, let's pivot to the draft.
Let's do it.
And let's set the scene. The MLB draft is less important relatively than the other drafts. Not to Jordan Schusterman, who keeps track of all this stuff with one of the most impressive spreadsheets I've ever seen. Multiple people came up to you unannounced at the draft to thank you for your nerdy draft spreadsheet that you
only certain people have access to it, but the people that do, yes. I'm just trying, listen, this is something that it's all up to this day, but it also brings a level of like, all right, I'm here. And then it's like, it's happening so fast and it becomes like, oh my gosh, all this months and months and months of work. And then suddenly it's just gone. And then I have to, move on to the next thing. Start my 2025 spreadsheet.
We really love the draft. And over the last few years, it's clear that Major League Baseball has been trying to kind of up the production value of the draft experience, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
And last night, I would say, was easily the best draft they have ever put on.
Sure.
From a viewing experience, this is... We've been in every draft since 2017, which makes me feel very old. This is the fourth draft that they've done on site in person at the All-Star game. In Denver, they did it in a theater. Mm-hmm. In LA, they did it outside at LA Live, and it was
sticky
hot.
Yeah.
Last year, they did it in Seattle at the Seahawks Stadium. Mm-hmm. And last night, they did it at the Fort Worth Stockyards inside the Rodeo Arena.
Yes.
And let me say, it was the perfect venue.
Yeah.
A touch too hot, but that's okay.
Yes.
But the size of it and the lighting and the atmosphere, it was great.
And the fact that it was unique, it wasn't just a generic theater like with a stage. Like, they clearly had to trick it out. The fact that the floor was dirt was kind of great. Like, it was very weird, but it was cool.
And everyone leaned into the Texasness of it all.
Yeah, which was both at times you roll your eyes and at times like, yeah, this is exactly what we should be doing.
Yes.
I enjoyed that part for sure.
It was endearingly campy.
Yes. So that part was cool. And it does feel like, especially, J.J. Weatherholt, boy, did he lean into it with his fit.
I had one MLB employee who was like, yeah, this is so great. I think we're going to do it here every year. And then we looked at each other, and then they just started laughing.
Yeah, it's like, probably not.
Probably not.
It'd be funny, right? We'd be moving around the All-Star game. It's like we keep the draft Atlanta next year. It's like, all right, yeah, the draft's going to be still in Fort Worth.
Hope you like cows.
Yes. All right, so let's get into the pick. So obviously, Cleveland with the selection, they had a 2% chance to get this pick during the draft lottery, and here they are with the opportunity to take anyone that they please, and they went with the wonder from down under, Mr. Travis Bezonja. Any question that they would maybe we can cut a little underslot deal, go with J.J. Weatherholt. Maybe we won't be able to pass on a Charlie Condon or maybe even go for a pitcher like Chase Burns.
Nope.
No. Travis Bezonja, my top player in the class. Not everyone's top player in the class, but a good number of people. We've talked about him a ton, but I just think that you combine everything. I just can't imagine getting in a room with this kid and not wanting to take number one. It's kind of that simple. And look, we love J.J. Weatherholt, and I would have loved that pick too. And the Cardinals should be ecstatic, and I'm sure they are. But for Bezonja, man, he is. It's an unbelievable story, and the passing feature about him is great. I really do think that it can be a huge deal for Australian baseball. It's a massive, massive deal for Australian baseball. Shouts out to our old producer Chris Tyler, who I was, of course, an Aussie himself. He is ecstatic about this pick. This could be a huge deal for that community, and I know he's taking that head on.
Especially there, because like athletes in Australia make less money than we're used to here. So what's going to happen is, people are going to be like, oh, very cool. And then he's going to sign this bonus.
For $10 million.
And it's going to be like Australian. He's
probably the largest bonus ever, right?
Yeah.
It'll probably be more than skinny just because of inflation and stuff. But we'll see.
And that number is going to be like home. Like a lot of Australians are going to be like, whoo. And then when he signs his free agent contract in 6 years, it's going to be like, right?
Yeah.
Which is great. Like that's how you grow the game in different areas. Sure. It's you have to have really a player who's a linchpin to do that. So we have Travis Bezonja doing that for Australia. Hopefully David Matoma soon.
That's the story for another podcast. You can Google David Matoma, but I definitely agree with that.
At number two was the Cincinnati Reds. Essentially every mock draft had the Reds taking Charlie Condon, who was the College Player of the Year, Golden Spikes Award winner, slugger from the University of Georgia, who hit 37 home runs and won the batting title. However, more like the Cincinnati Zags, because they zigged. They took Chase Burns, a pitcher from Wake Forest, with the second overall pick.
Yeah, and there was some buzz about them considering Burns for sure, but that choice to go with the pitcher over so many of these hitters that in theory are more trustworthy, there's a lot of discourse about, let's just get this out of the way now, a lot of the stuff around the kind of the Reds, the way people that were covering the Reds and the way they were talking about it is, you know, offense in college baseball now is so, so outrageous. With the home runs up more than basically we've ever seen since the bats changed, with the pitching kind of being down, just a lot of with the baseballs, everything, right? Offense is up. We've mentioned it before. And while obviously there are still very hitters that I'm sure will become good major league hitters, I think it is interesting that they're like, you know what I can trust? The guy that's striking out all these guys that have 1,500 OPSs.
You know what I can't?
Chase Burns, who was largely considered the best pitcher on the board and got better, you know, in his 3 years in college. I mean, I get that. There's obvious risk that comes with that too, because he is a pitcher.
Yep.
That's the job description. It's a big choice.
You know what I can't trust? A 433, 556, 1,009 slash line. That 1009 slash line, friends, is not an OPS. That's a slugging percentage.
That's the old SLG.
Yeah, that's what Charlie Condon did in his junior year at Georgia.
Yeah.
And you have to expect those numbers are only going to go up once he gets to Coors Field. That is not how it works. I'm merely joking.
Yeah.
But the Rockies taking him at two is good. Good pick.
At three. Yeah, and so
good pick, Colorado.
And it wasn't surprising that they would be like, oh, wait, Charlie Condon's still on the board. He plummets, you know, to three. That makes sense. The A's go Nick Kurtz. And by the way, for Charlie Condon, yeah, I mean, that's one where the interesting thing with that is
they announced him as an outfielder.
They announced him as the outfielder. And then the other thing with that is 10 years ago, they really wanted to take Chris Bryant. And Chris Bryant went one pick before them. They took Jonathan Gray. It was pretty good. But he wasn't Chris Bryant. Now they have Chris Bryant, and Chris Bryant isn't very good, but they could have the young, healthy, great version of Chris Bryant if it all clicks for Charlie Condon. I was saying, who was I talking? I was talking to our friend Daniel Alvarez, and we were talking about whatever Venezuelan baseball, and we're talking, oh, Ezequiel Tovar should be here. Okay, why am I bringing this up? Well, like, oh, it's fine. Tovar will be the All-Star next year. And then I was like, listen, it's Charlie Condon. So we'll see what happens with the Rockies. They go with Condon 3, and I'm sure they are quite excited about that. If you haven't seen the video of Dinger, one of the funniest parts, the best parts of the draft in person and All-Star Week in general is that all the mascots are around.
Yeah.
And the mascot in a draft setting is especially hilarious. So I encourage you to go watch the video that Jake tweeted last night. Anyway, the A's take Nick Kurtz at 4. This is a player who was close to the top of boards at the start of the season, you know, has had some shoulder injuries. He's a first baseman. Didn't quite have as consistent of a year as everybody else, but he had a wild hot stretch in the middle of the season where he had like 15 homers in 10 games. And it's, again, it's as far as he had the most consistent college performance of basically anybody, even more than Bizana, because he was elite as a freshman. It's 3 years of amazing ACC performance, one of the great ACC careers ever. And the A's kind of keep it simple here.
Biggest concern with him for me is that he's never really used a wood bat as a collegian, you know. It's not like you're going to put lumber in his hands and he's going to forget how to hit.
Yeah.
But it is a concern that the ball will jump a little bit different once he gets kind of into the pro setting. At number 5, the White Sox take Hagen Smith, left-handed pitcher out of Arkansas. Fine. Good pick. Like, taking a pitcher there over Caglione is really That's just the interesting part.
Yep. Because I think people assumed if Caglione was to make it to 5, that the White Sox would pounce there. But they were kind of set on going pitcher there. Smith, you know, some would argue is the best pitcher in this draft. Incredibly talented lefty. The White Sox have targeted kind of low slot, funky lefties over the years. Of course, dating back to Chris Sale, but even one of their top prospects now, Noah Schultz.
Garrett Crochet.
So, you know, they got a type, but it's also interesting because there are some new names in that White Sox draft room that came over from Kansas City. And now they maybe take, who knows, maybe Kansas City wanted Hagen Smith, and then ultimately they are not able to pass up on Jack Cags.
Kansas City taking Caglione at 6th overall, the most famous name in the draft because he was a two-way player at Florida. Whenever I see, let me just take a step back. Using Ohtani to promote Caglione is both good and bad to me.
Yeah.
Because I think it oversimplifies what Jack Caglione is as a player and sets unrealistic expectations for him. However, it does a good job of getting people interested in the draft. People who understand what Shohei Ohtani is, and we can say, hey, there is something here that could maybe be like this. Yeah. However, I will go on record and say it won't be. We won't see this again. Ohtani is singular, and to compare anybody to him really is a difficult burden to carry. However, Caglione was just unbelievable with the University of Florida during his time there as a Gator. Pitched for them on Sundays his sophomore year, and then pitched for them on Saturdays this past year. The velo was down as the year went on. Is he going to pitch in pro ball? The Royals say yes. He says yes. They listed him as a two-way player. We're a little bit more skeptical. Seems like, though, I heard they are going to run him out in the outfield to start, just to try him out there. That's great, and it's because his bat is so special. If everything clicks, it's like peak Matt Olson-level production,
sure,
where he's going to swing a ton, but the barrel control and the power is just off the charts.
Yeah,
this, I love getting him here.
Sure.
I would be uncomfortable taking him at 1.
Yeah,
I really like getting him at 6.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's a very unique profile. I feel like Nick Kurtz, and I think they said, the A's said this, they were like, understandably, they see Kurtz as an Olsen type, and I like that comp a little bit more. Production-wise, yeah, right, you're talking about first baseman with 40 homer power, probably never going to walk quite that much, but maybe, you know, we'll see how Cag's, you know, really aggressive approach translates to pro ball, but that is definitely an interesting landing spot, and I do think there are some teams in the top 10 that were considering him that absolutely would have just announced him as a first baseman. So the fact that the Royals were still willing to say two-way player is notable to some degree, even if he ditches it within the next calendar year.
Yeah, and I think that announcing him as a two-way player makes sense because you're not having to embarrass him, if this makes sense, in that way, where if you're announcing him as a first base only, one of the first things you're saying to the kid you're about to make a vital member of your future is, I don't believe you can do this thing.
Sure.
Right? Whereas if you say two-way, and then you could just sit him down in 2 months and tell him it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, this is why, like, Spencer Torkelson got, like, announced as a third baseman, right?
There are some versions of that that are interesting. We saw it with Gerangelo Sanja, you know, being announced as a switch-handed pitcher, the Mariners' first-round pick. Someone who, you know, we talked to him at the combine, and like, I think that like, yeah, I mean, he could do it, but I think the reason why most teams are excited about him is because of how good he's been from the right side. But the same thing, Scott Hunter, the scouting director, said like, yeah, like we're interested in that. We'll see if that is a thing that makes sense for us moving forward.
What's funny
if
about
he
him?
He actually sticks to it. Who knows? But you can understand that no matter who, like that is how. Not that you're taking picks for PR, but for example, if you go to MLB.com, the Mariners' pick is, I think, the only two picks that are mentioned as the sidebar on the top of MLB.com are Bizzana and Gerangelo, because he's a switch pitcher, right? And so that is not an accident. Like, that is, again, that's not why the Mariners are taking a pick, but there is cachet there that comes with that that is kind of interesting and not surprising. So I think it makes same thing with Cags. Like, that's why you announce it both ways, because there is some novelty to it, and I think that he earned that to a certain degree to be able to be announced that way. Jumping back to...
Sanchez is funny. It's like, with the right hand, it's... poor man Spencer Strider, maybe. And with the left hand, it's like John King.
John King, a big leaguer.
Big leaguer. It's like the left hand, it's like, this could be a decent reliever.
Right.
Right hand, it's like, woo.
Yeah. So we will see what happens with Gerangelo. Obviously.
Yeah.
That's a fun pick too.
Turbo mode a little bit here. JJ Weatherholt at number 7. We talked about him a ton. Yeah. We had him on the podcast. The Cardinals have to be ecstatic to get this kid here. He's perfect for the Cardinals kind of deal. And I like, it's great.
Also, it's great. There was their only pick of night one. They were one of, I think, three teams that only had one pick on day one. So this is one, especially for the Cardinals, who haven't been picking this high in decades,
yeah,
to be able to land a player that some people had at the very, very top, or at the very least in the top three.
Great.
You know, sure, you know, you have the hamstring issues, but incredible player, incredible kid, and that's just an unreal outcome for them. That is so exciting. Even though some of us, you know, the mock draft said it was definitely possible, so it wasn't that shocking, but ultimately you come away like that, and it's just a really special night.
If we're talking about fan bases who should be excited with how things went, I mean, every fan base is excited the day after the draft because there's this infusion of talent, and like the entrance of good players is a lot easier to be happy about than the exit of disappointing players in the minor league system and like retirement. Like, that doesn't happen in the same way, right? So the draft is always optimism and the back end doesn't really see anything.
Yeah.
The Cardinals fans should be really happy. Yep. At number 8, Christian Moore, second baseman from the University of Tennessee, was unbelievable in Omaha when the Volunteers won the hit for the cycle. Really physical kid. Seems like he took a little bit of an underslot deal here at 8 to go to the Angels.
Yeah, and let's just get the Ohtani pick combo out of the way now, right? So the Angels, one of the teams we were interested in, okay, what would they do at 8? Would they take one of the consensus top 8, whether it was a Bryce Rainer, the high school shortstop, outfielder Braden Montgomery, who ends up flying to 12? And then what would they do with the last pick of the night, pick 74? And the questions of, would the Angels take fast-moving players? And my sense was, what I kept saying in the months ago was, okay, the Angels, they just take quick to the big leagues guys. Now, in the past few years, it's like, okay, yeah, because they're trying to desperately help their big league team, you know, win with Shohei Ohtani. They tried to do it last year. They rushed Nolan Chanuel up to the big leagues for that reason, and it did not work. It sort of worked with Neto to some degree, but whatever.
He's going to be a good big leaguer.
Yeah, I like Neto. Yeah. That's fine. But I was like, well, why are rushing them to do what? Like, what?
To win 72 games?
Yeah, if that. Like, what is the hurry? Like, we just need to be taking the best players. Moore is kind of an interesting compromise between those two things, because there's definitely a version where he moves pretty quickly, but there are going to be some adjustments that he's probably going to have to make in pro ball to where it's hard to imagine him coming up that quickly. That said, their other two picks, Chris Cortez and Ryan Johnson, fit the description of possible. I mean, Cortez was already a reliever, one of the hardest throwers in the draft. Johnson, a guy who had incredible numbers as a starter, but everything about him screams reliever. Both of those guys, I think, if you said needed to go get an out in the big leagues tomorrow, would be two of your first picks. Mm-hmm. Now, are we going to see these guys in the big leagues this year? Maybe. I don't know why you would do that. But like, honestly,
the
Angels are impossible to figure out. And like, if you're Perry and you probably aren't going to survive this season
anyway.
Thing. Like,
that's what's so weird about this.
I just don't understand how that draft dynamic works. I really, really don't.
Because their GM, Perry Minasian, is, if I had to pick guys least likely to have their job a year from now. The consensus is that's going to be Perry, right? Yeah. He's at the towards the top of that list. And so it's like you're drafting for a future that you won't be a part of.
Right.
Is just very odd and very bizarre.
So I don't know. But anyway, pick 74. And Cortez, and yeah, again.
Love Cortez.
And that's the other thing, though, is, as everyone pointed out, leave it to the Angels. I assume you saw this. Christian Moore had a notable moment during Omaha where he said some choice words directed towards Chris Cortez when they played against them in Omaha. And now they're teammates. All right. Have fun, guys. Okay. All that stuff is generally overblown. However, it is extremely Angels for this to happen. So,
because
anyway,
there's no way they knew that. There's no way they knew that one of their draft picks called the other one, you know, a BITCH. Yeah. All right. Let's move forward. Yeah. At number nine, Connor Griffin.
Yeah.
Here's the deal with Connor Griffin. Outrageous athlete. Like, top of the charts. Unbelievable athlete. Can he hit? Unclear. I am an amateur swing assessor. I watch Connor Griffin swing, and it looks weird. It looks pretty weird.
Pirates,
power is great. Speed's great. This is a pick where if he had gone to maybe a team with a better track record of developing hitters, I would feel better about it. The Pirates have not really shown an ability to. That's where my skepticism comes from. Best of luck to everybody involved.
Yeah. The thing about that is still probably a situation where there are enough people in the draft room that said, Connor Griffin at nine? You know, like this is a guy that has been considered the top player in the class for the last year. And I would guess that the scouts kind of just won out there. And we're just like, listen, this is, we do not have the opportunity, especially in Pittsburgh. It's like, we don't usually have the opportunity to acquire this kind of impact talent, but long way to go, and I have a feeling we will know pretty quickly, you know, how that's going.
Right.
We will see. We will see.
This could be Bubba Starling. Mm-hmm. This could be Mike Trout. We don't know. It's probably somewhere in the middle. At number 10, the Nats, probably the most interesting draft last night. They take Seaver King, who I'm going to call a utility player and not in a slighting way, out of Wake Forest University. He's kind of an undersized guy. We talked to him at the combine. He was very interesting, very nice. But kind of an underslot move here. Probably save some money with Seaver King. And the idea there was maybe they could float someone to their picks later on.
Right, because they had acquired the extra pick. They trade Hunter Harvey over the weekend. I guess we haven't talked about that on the podcast. They trade Hunter Harvey to the Royals. They get a prospect in Caden Wallace, and they get the 39th pick. So if you're the Nats scouting department, you're like, oh, amazing. We got another pick on day one, the day before the draft starts, and we got another $2 million plus dollars of pool money to play with. That's great.
Yeah.
And how they chose to use it was very interesting. Taking King at 10, passing up on a Bryce Rainer or a Braden Montgomery, taking Seaver King, who was projected more in the 15 to 20 range, and then taking Caleb Lomavita later, a catcher out of Cal. Both King and Lomavita, extremely athletic, really fun to watch when they're rolling, very aggressive. They are not one to take their base. They're up there trying to swing. We will see how Nationals player development can help them and their third pick, Luke Dickerson, a high school shortstop from New Jersey, who had a lot of buzz this spring. And I would guess, based on where these guys went, I think they still have one more considerably. I think they're going to have another seven-figure guy early on day two. So we'll see.
What's interesting about the Nats, though, is they have a different scouting department. Sure. And you could kind of see a new trend.
Mike Rizzo's still in charge, for sure.
Yeah, definitely still in charge. But this taking a cold weather bat and two high contact guys is kind of a different, is a bit of a zag for Rizzo. Let's take a break, if that's okay. And when we get back, we'll kind of turbo mode through the second half of the first round and then preview the home run derby. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Let's keep the draft times rolling. At number 11, the Detroit Tigers take Bryce Rainer.
Bryce Rainer, again, a consensus top 10 player, probably the consensus second best player in the high school class. Some said he was number one. For the Tigers to get him at 11, we'll get to this later in the first round, where it's like, oh, he's still on the board? Okay, let's take him. And this seemed to be a situation like that.
Yeah, he could have gone as high as
five or six.
Like, to get him there was great. At number 12, Red Sox taking Braden Montgomery.
Same thing.
Outfielder from Texas A&M. Broke his ankle. Let me just say this. Red Sox fans, don't watch the video of him breaking his ankle. Like, I know you're like, oh, his ankle's broken. I should watch that.
Nesson, we don't need to show that.
We don't need to show that. Yeah. Producer Hartz, I watched him watch this
yesterday
sitting next to me at the draft.
It's not awesome.
It's not quite, you know, Paul George.
No. And I was going to say, I don't do great with those injuries. I try to avoid them. I was watching that live and it was like, not fun.
Ankle's going the wrong way.
However,
great player.
He did have a scooter and a boot.
Adorable. Just to see him scoot onto the bath floor.
He is awesome. And that's one where it's like, oh my God, Braden Montgomery's still here. Cause that's one where it's like, you're not even, that's why when they talk to these guys, like, you got to be prepared. You got to do your work on these guys so that you know, like, oh, wait, Braden Montgomery's still here? Yes, absolutely.
It's like studying for an exam, and it's like, just in case this question shows up on the final, you got to prep for it. At number 13, the San Francisco Giants take James Tibbs III, a.k.a. Jimmy Three Sticks.
Giants, another one of the teams with only one pick because they spent in free agency, and this was kind of chalk, right? Tibbs was projected to go right in this range here, and I like it. Pretty simple. If it all goes well, we will see him hitting some balls into McCovey Cove in a couple years.
Back-to-back Florida State guys, which makes me happy. At number 14, the Cubs taking Cam Smith. Very interesting player. About as physical as it gets. I saw him in Omaha when you're standing next to him. It's like, that's a big leaguer right now. Yes, he looks like a big leaguer.
Yes.
Can he play third base? That's a question. Some teams might have to think that he'll move to the outfield. And the most kind of damning thing is he needs a swing change. Like, the hack needs some work, but the raw juice is in there, and the Cubs getting him at 14 is fine. We'll see how their player development group goes about it. At 15, Gerangelo Sancho, we talked about him already a little bit. Just talk to me about him as kind of being taken over Trey Savage, who is the other top college pitcher in this range who was mocked to the Mariners. What do you think about them going Sancho over Savage?
Yeah, I think a lot of the sense was, Savage, we'll get to him here in a second, would be that the Mariners would be the floor for him. There's no way he would fall that far. But then later in the process, it seemed like there were a lot of mock drafts that were connecting the Mariners to Gerangelo. So I think it was clear that they were considering those two. And then Cam Caminiti was also still on the board, the top high school pitcher. We'll get to him in a little bit. So that decision is pretty significant. And I will say that the other thing is to bring up here is maybe they saved a little bit on Gerangelo at this point, maybe not, but they made a very aggressive maneuver getting Ryan Sloan, probably a top three or four high school pitcher, able to get him all the way at pick 55 in the second round. It's going to be a lot of money probably devoted to getting him signed. So whether that's probably more likely to impact their later picks than it is to impact Gerangelo. But again, with the Mariners, the way I said, our friend, now Gerangelo was here in Fort Worth. He was here, and our producer, Andrew Hart, said he saw Gerangelo and his family celebrating, you know, after later. And I said, yeah, if I was a pitcher, I'd celebrate too if the Mariners picked me. that means, one, I don't suck, and two, I'm probably about to get a lot better.
Right.
So I imagine for Gerangelo and Ryan Sloan, they both got to be pretty excited about that.
Kind of the opposite of what happened with Brody Brecht.
No, okay, well, we'll get to that later. Anyway, the Marlins at 16.
At 16, Marlins taking PJ Morlando. I would say the first moment of the draft, Morlando is relatively famous. Like, he was one of the top high school guys in the class for a long time.
Yeah.
His picture is all over the Perfect Game website. He's incredibly personable in the Max Clark mode. But as a player, he comes with a lot more flaws, right? Is he going to have to move to first base? Is he athletic enough to play the outfield?
Yeah.
Is there enough hitting ability here? The power is pretty impressive. But it did feel like, to me, this is interesting because the Marlins, it is a new regime there. Mm-hmm. And for them to go and take a player who kind of wasn't on anyone's board in this range might be indicative of a new strategy that we just haven't seen yet.
Them. And they get Carter Johnson, who you know, they take Morlando earlier than people expected. They get Carter Johnson later than people expected, another high school player. So kind of balances out. Didn't love it, but, you know, it seems like they've been on Morlando for a while. And if you said Morlando, you got 2 years ago, if you said you would get Morlando at 16, you'd be like, well, that's pretty impressive. But 2 years ago was a long time ago. Braylon Payne goes to the Brewers at 17. Brewers, one of the few teams with four picks last night, along with Arizona and Minnesota. And this was their first one. Braylon Payne, a speedy outfielder, high school outfielder from Texas, a guy who was projected more in the second round. They clearly are probably going to get an underslot deal with him. They paid two more, or probably are going to try to pay two more pitchers later in Chris Lavonis and Bryce Message. I guess that's both high school pitchers from New Jersey. So shouts out to that area scout for getting those two guys. But they also, you know, get Braylon Payne and then Blake Burke, first baseman from Tennessee, who I love. So on the whole, you know, it'd be hard to have four picks and me not to like at least one of them. But this was an interesting one. And Payne is one where it's like, man, if they really hit on him, this could really end up being a hell of a draft. And so that was definitely a surprise, though, I would say, early in the first round there.
Theo Gillen goes to Tampa Bay at 18. He had a pretty injury-checked, you know, last few years, but the talent here is very impressive.
Yeah, you know, considered definitely in that inner circle of high school hitters. Is he going to be a shortstop? Is he going to be an outfielder? Either way, you're buying the bat here. High school, you know, usually bats from Texas like this, very polished. And the Rays have done pretty well with high school players recently. And I would not be surprised if Theo Gillen is the next one to do that. Shouts out to the Rays, who took Kentucky second baseman Emilian Petrie later on in the draft, a guy who I think we both loved.
Not from Kentucky.
No, very much not. He's from Kentucky.
He's from Quebec.
He is from the up north there, above the border, you know, the French part, if you can't tell, by the Emilian.
It's really hard to not be like, oh, it's Edouard Julien again, because they're different players, let's be clear.
Yeah, they're not.
They're both French-Canadian second basemen who ended up in the SEC.
Yes.
But but Petrie is much, much more athletic.
Yes. More Julien. Defense, more contact, more. It's a little bit more of a balanced profile, whereas Julien, obviously, it's the walks and power. But no, awesome player. And I didn't understand why people didn't think he was going to be a day one pick. And I'm glad the Rays were like, no, he's definitely a day one pick.
At number 19, the New York Mets take Carson Benjamin, outfielder from Oklahoma State. Really impressive bat to ball skills, outstanding outfield arm. The one issue with him is, can he get the ball in the air and can he hit it in the air to the pull side? The exit velocities are there, but for him, it's going to be about learning how to drive the baseball.
Their second pick, Jonathan Santucci, another guy we talked to at the combine. That's another guy who, you know, came into college mostly as an outfielder, blossoms on the mound, one of the best left-handed pitchers in the draft. I love where they got him. I mean, man, they got Santucci at 46. That's
great.
That's, again, some medical issues there. A little inconsistent health over his college career, but I think that's one of the better second round picks. You got to be really, really excited about that.
And a new draft room as well for the Mets. For sure. First draft under David Stearns. Interesting to see them kind of take a high contact guy in Bench with that first pick. At number 20, Trey Savage, who we briefly talked about, pitcher from East Carolina, goes to the Blue Jays. Really polished mix. We chatted with him at the combine as well. This pick is like, again, it's the, oh, he's still on the board?
Yeah.
Take him.
Yep. That's a pretty easy one. And then getting Cal Steven too, a pitcher from Mississippi State later on. Two really, really impressive pitchers that, listen, the Blue Jays are in a bad place for a lot of reasons right now, both at the major and minor league level. And this is a nice way to fall. We'll see how they can round out the rest of their draft.
At number 21, Kalen Culpepper, an infielder from Kansas State. He was at the draft. One of my favorite moments of the night was just the camera cutting to him and him crying.
Yeah.
More men crying in public.
Yes.
Especially in the world of baseball, please. We love to see that. Kalen Culpepper also chatted with him at the combine. Great kid. Like, he just really seemed to soak up the moment in a very special way. As a player, it's on like pro level, like wrist, forearm strength. Mm-hmm. Can he play shortstop? That's an open question. Is he going to swing too much? Another open question. I just am very in on him as a hitter, though. I think it's special.
Twins had four picks. I loved three of them. Billy Amick, we'll see, but Dayson Hill, lefty pitcher for a high school pitcher from Texas, and then Kyle DeBarge, shortstop from Louisiana Lafayette. Again, four picks. I'm probably gonna like a few of them. But Culpepper here, I love that one. So that was Twins feeling great about them.
Orioles had a very interesting draft. It is the sixth year that they have picked under this current regime with Mike Elias. They have taken, in the first round every year, a hitter. And I believe it has been a college hitter every year except Jackson Holliday, who was basically a college hitter, considering how much BP he took at Oklahoma State with his dad.
Sure.
And again, they take Vance Honeycutt, an outfielder from North Carolina. Now, we have officially reached a point, I believe, where it's like, the Orioles do not have enough position spots in the major leagues for all of these prospects. We're already there. And then they took three college hitters again yesterday.
Yeah.
And what it tells me, it's fair to ask this question, how many games are Vance Honeycutt and Griff O'Farrell going to play in the major leagues for the Baltimore Orioles, right?
Yeah.
At this point, what the Orioles have identified, they are incredibly good at developing hitters, specifically college hitters, right? And to build that asset up, you can then trade that for established big league pitching as they already did with Corbin Burnes. That, at least in their mind, is the value. We do this one thing really well. Why would we zag from the formula? I get it. Honeycutt as a player seems like the final boss for them. Goes unbelievable athlete, great college performer, elite defender in center field, legit raw juice. Boy, does he swing and miss a lot, right? Like the K rates are really concerning. Can they teach him how to make more contact? We'll see. They balanced it out with Griff O'Farrell, who they took with their second pick of the night, who is the opposite question. Like, pretty good.
No power, but plays the hell out of shortstop and doesn't strike out. So
normal K rate.
Below average. Yeah.
If you average Honeycutt and O'Farrell.
You put them together. They take Griff O'Farrell's teammate, Ethan Anderson. So WVA there for the O's. And yeah, it's like, will we see Honeycutt as an Oriole one day? Or is he now, you know, does this class push out the guys at the top, the Norbys, Kerstads, Mayos? Do those guys get moved in trades in the next month?
Good
or
problem
in the
to
offseason? All good problem to have. But I do feel like it's mixing a pitcher, maybe.
Why?
We'll see if they do on day two.
They're good at this thing. I'm not asking you to do a podcast about football.
23. The Dodgers, they had one pick. Kellen Lindsey, another one of our combine conversations. Kellen Lindsey, a guy who injured last summer. If he wasn't injured last summer, everyone would have known about him. Instead, over the first month of this year, everyone's like, oh my God, this Kellen Lindsey guy is amazing. High school shortstop in Florida, one of the fastest players in the draft. And, you know, they let Trey Turner walk in free agency. That's whether that was a good or a bad decision. Right now, not looking awesome. But, you know, we could debate that. Now they get a player who is very much resembles Turner at his high school version.
I think what's important to understand, this is a good place to have a brief conversation about comps.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Comps are lazy. When they do them on broadcasts, I generally roll my eyes. But they're also useful to try and teach someone about a player. Yeah. But what I think is important to understand is, like, this is what player X looked like at this stage in the development.
Right.
Kellen Lindsey is what Trey Turner looked like and played like as a guy leaving high school, going into college. Right. That is an easy way to understand it, I think, without being irresponsible.
Yeah. And we have no idea what will happen. Right. Will Kellen Lindsey develop more power? Will Kellen Lindsey not stick a shortstop and end up in center field? There's so many things that can happen next, but it is what it looks like now.
Exactly. Cam Caminiti to the Braves at number 24.
This was also probably one of the biggest surprises of the night. He was in attendance, and I think when you looked at the players who were there, no one would have expected that Cam Caminiti would have been the last player in attendance to hear his name called as the top high school pitcher in the draft, and the Braves managed to get him at 24. I imagine they're going to have to pay him a whole bunch over that slot value, which I believe was, you know, that slot value was at, you know, $3.5 million. I would imagine that bonus is going to be closer to $4 million, but that's really amazing. That's another one where, you know, their position player, their farm system has like no hitters to speak of, but they've been really good at developing arms, and they're going to keep kind of leaning into that core competency and getting Caminiti at 24. You obviously have to be pretty excited about that. Speaking of left-handed pitchers, Cash Mayfield goes 25 to the Padres. Eighth straight year the Padres have taken a high schooler with their first pick. This is so on brand. Cash Mayfield kind of dominating in
the middle
of nowhere, Oklahoma.
Like,
guess
Elk
what?
City,
I bet,
Oklahoma.
I bet A.J. Preller was at every start.
Every start.
A.J. Preller, the scoutiest scout of any GM by far. He's got everyone else lapped. An elite talent evaluator. Is he an elite GM otherwise?
TBD.
Who's to say?
Actually, we should probably D it. It should be D'd by
at
now.
At this point...
If we have indeed,
we're past the TBD stage for Preller. But
it's
anyway,
just a,
hey,
he's
Padres
just a B. It's
Padres,
just a B.
Padres having a good season. Cash Mayfield, another talented lefty, and on brand for the Padres to go here.
Interesting dynamic because he's a player who didn't do a lot of showcase stuff really at all. And so if you only scout the showcase circuit, you probably didn't see Cash Mayfield a lot, which is why A.J. Preller and the Padres, who go to the places.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. See and be seen.
Yeah.
They felt comfortable taking Mayfield there. Pick later. New York Yankees at 26, taking Ben Hess, a big old donkey from the University of Alabama. Roll Tide. He is 6'5", 255. Horrible numbers this year. Now, if you adjust for the hitting environment in college baseball, looks a little bit better, but a 5.80 ERA.
Less bad.
5.80 ERA as a first-round pick in college, like, that is easy to have Yankees fans go, he's a bust.
Yeah.
I actually, can you talk about Ben Hess for a second? Because I bookmarked some Yankee fan tweets that I just want to read quickly
about
this.
Aesthetically, statistically, I can understand why you would, if you have not followed this at all, you'd be like, who is this guy? This guy stinks. And yeah, very inconsistent, and there is some risk here. But the stuff at his best, like early on in the season, he had some outings where it was like, oh, he's clearly one of the best pitchers in the draft.
Yep.
And then it just kind of went off the rails in the SEC play. And so, but hey, Yankees have been good at developing pitching, so we'll see what they can do with him. I really like the Bryce Cunningham pick, their second round pick. I like Cunningham more than Hess. So I don't know if the bonuses are going to end up being probably similar. I wouldn't be surprised. But hey, two pitchers that I imagine they can help get better.
What I'm about to say sounds like a joke, okay? At sportsfan29, whose handle is just Gio Urshela, says, bad pick. Judge World 99 says, bust. Rick.
How's Rick feeling about Ben Hess? Was he locked in that April start against, you know, Auburn?
Good grief. Another inexplicable draft selection. Cashman always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. Draft history says otherwise. Great third baseman available. Nope. It's been an empty position forever. Literally every uneducated Yankees fan wanted them to take Tommy White, which is so funny because that is just not a good fit. Like, it's just not. The Yankees are good.
I'm sorry. You think Tommy White's going to shave?
Yeah. No way.
You think Tommy White's going to shave? You think Tommy White's going to cut his hair or shave, let alone
Yankees fans are like, we want the most famous person we've ever heard of, please. Also, right. Just one quick thing
exactly
here.
Exactly correct.
Cashman always thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. There are a lot of reasons to critique Brian Cashman. He does not make the picks for the Yankees.
That's not a secret.
Damon Oppenheimer, who runs,
I mean, he's
runs
involved.
He's involved. He's in the room. Like, but more really than any other team, I can't say that. He is towards the bottom end of GMs making the pick, right?
Yeah, I think that's
critique Cashman for giving Aaron Hicks 7 years or whatever. Like, that's fine. But he did not. Like, don't put Ben Hess on him yet. Okay, Dante Norie at 27 to the Phillies. Fun fact here, Dante Norie's dad, Micah Norie, is the assistant coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves. And when the Timberwolves head coach during the playoffs got run into and tore his ACL, Micah Norie was the person who had to go and like be the actual coach walking on the sidelines.
Dante Norie, one of the oldest high school players that I can really ever remember seeing. He turns 20 in October. That's not great. There are some teams that will just basically automatically cross him off, especially in Michigan, where he's just beating up on mediocre competition. However, talented player. Did a showcase circuit. Speedy outfielder. Good, promising young left-handed hitter. Not young. Old left-handed hitter. young-ish relative to, you know, the larger population. But that was an interesting one. They take Griffin Burkholder, another high school outfielder, later. You're kind of sticking your neck out there. These are very scouty picks. For the Phillies, those can go very well. Those can go very poorly.
They nailed one last year with Aiden Miller.
True. But that one was much more consensus, right? People really liked Aiden Miller, and that one was a little bit different. This one, we will see. Now, again, you're a Phillies fan. You don't care about this right now, and why should you? But it was just fun. You're the only good major league team. So you have that. Don't worry about Dante Norie, Griffin Burkholder, but that is my opinion of their draft.
At number 28, Astros take Walker Yannick, a catcher from Sam Houston.
Yes.
Again, I'm going to do an irresponsible comp.
Oh.
Slightly less athletic version of JT Realmuto is kind of the style of catcher that we're talking about here.
Story time. I went to a wedding recently. I met a guy who was sitting at my table named Yannick. After a few drinks, I was like, we were chatting up. Awesome guy, baseball fan. And I was like, I got to tell this guy about Walker Yannick, like one of my favorite players in this year's upcoming draft. I'm like, I got to tell this guy. He's going to be a first round pick, and you got to get his jersey. You don't meet Yannicks very often.
Now this guy's first name is Yannick.
Yeah, Yannick. His name is Yannick. I'm like, oh my God, Yannick. Like, I've been thinking about this guy, Walker Yannick, for the last year, and you got to find out about him. So I'm like, hey, dude, check this out. This dude, man, Walker Yannick, you got to see him. And he's like, yeah, I know about him. My name's Yannick Walker. Oh, I had no idea. I'm like, wait, what? And so he's like, yeah, I can't Google myself because this guy just has my name in reverse. And all-timer. And I was like, man, yeah, so you got to get his jersey. And but that's the question, existential question for him, right? Are you rooting for this kid to succeed so that, you know, you now have this guy who's just become – but then you can never Google anything related to yourself ever.
Probably healthy.
Like, yeah, probably that's fine, right? But whatever, you're looking stuff, whatever. Or are you rooting against him?
I want to be Yannick Walker.
Yeah,
Walker.
Right, exactly. So we'll see. But shouts out to Yannick. Awesome guy. One of the funniest experiences I've ever had. And also, awesome pick, even though obviously here in Fort Worth, the Rangers fans were booing mercilessly.
There was a moment last night where Manfred came out. Like, Manfred walks out last night to announce the Astros pick and gets booed mercilessly. And he brings and one of the Houston RBI softball players out with him. Mm-hmm. And so it just looks really bad that they're like booing the girl who's like walking on stage with Rob Manfred. He like is like kind of chiding the crowd, like giving them this face like, hey, why are you booing this nice young
woman?
She
handled it well.
She handled it really well.
Yeah.
And it's like, Rob, it's not just that, like, has anything to do with the can-banging scandal. Like, they're going to boo anything Astros-related.
I don't know if they were hoping that there would be Astros fans there, too, but anyway.
It was bizarre.
It was unfortunate. But I love this pick. Walker Yannick's awesome.
Two more first
and round. So is Yannick Walker. Shout out
to Yannick. Two more first-round picks. Slade Caldwell to the Diamondbacks at 29.
Diamondbacks had four picks also. I really liked this first one. Made some kind of more interesting ones later. But, yeah, I mean, I thought Caldwell was an easy top 20 talent. So to get him in this range... Feeling awesome. And yeah, another, you know, very much their type. It's a shorter, speedy, lefty outfielder, center field. It's, you know, he checks a lot of the Corbin Carroll boxes. I love him. I think that's a great pick.
At number 30, the hometown team. Picking last, which was good because people stayed for the whole first round.
Yeah.
So like all the Rangers fans were there all night.
Yep.
Malcolm Moore, Stanford catcher. Another one of our combine conversations. Great kid. Really love talking to him.
Yep.
The question with him, right, is can he catch? At the next level, mm-hmm. The bat seems very special.
Yep.
The underlying numbers were really good. The top-level stat line for him this year at Stanford was kind of underwhelming. A lot of batted ball luck going into that. He can really hit. The setup is weird.
Sure.
Like, it's a weird swing.
Him and Dylan Dreiling, their second pick out of Tennessee. Two unusual kind of lefty setups and lefty swings, but the production is tough to deny. I really like what the Rangers did.
All right, enough draft. Enough. Crumble
I
it
mean,
up. It,
not enough draft because I'm excited for day two and three, but we probably won't talk about that as much here on the podcast. If you have draft questions, draft thoughts, let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com.
Let's speed run a home run derby preview. Jordan Schusterman, the derby is tonight. It is my favorite night of the year.
Yeah.
Why? It is the only night where we just get to have a good time. The All-Star game itself still resembles competition in a way that is familiar. The pitchers are still trying their hardest. It is not overtly like fun tonight, is just for the vibes. And
yeah, and it is a competition. And the range of how seriously all the players take it is interesting because, okay, yeah, you got the $1 million prize, whatever. And also, especially with this year, where clearly some of the people that were invited were not some of the first picks. It was like, oh, you're an all-star. Can we get you there? I'm curious to see which ones take it the most serious. We know Pete. Fifth straight derby, only guy ever to do five straight derbies. We know he will take it very seriously. Who else are you most intrigued about? And then obviously we can do some picks. And by the way, we should also mention there are a few different things about the Homer Derby this year. They did change the format a little bit to limit the number of pitches that you get in each round. It's not just squeeze in as many as you can into that time frame. And then the first round will not be seeded. And so that means that it doesn't matter if you hit more home runs than the guy you were facing off against. You just have to hit at least the top four, which I love that change. That I do like. And then it becomes a bracket. So whoever hits the first most homers in the first round will face the guy who hit the fourth most and so on. So that I definitely like. I think that's an obvious improvement. The other tiny tweaks, I don't know how I'll feel about them. We'll see how it actually plays during the actual event. But as for the players involved, of course, we have six right-handed hitters. We have Teoscar Hernandez. We have Marcell Ozuna. We have Bobby Witt Jr. Ever heard of him?
We have Alec Boehm.
We have Pete Alonso. And we have Adolis Garcia, who is not an all-star, but he is a Ranger. So he will be here, and he will participate after last year. He was in it in Seattle. And then we have Jose Ramirez competing in his second derby.
He's going to switch plates.
We will see if he bats lefty and righty. We will see. And then Gunnar Henderson, who was the first one announced, and will be trying to do his best to provide baseballs to those sitting in the right field seats,
yes.
Who will be feeling very left out for much of tonight.
Underrated thing about the derby. The winner gets $1 million. I think that MLB should hype that up more. I know it feels silly when these guys are making, you know, millions and millions. But like, if Gunnar Henderson wins tonight, he'll get more from winning the Derby than from the Orioles this year. Right. Like, that's nuts, right?
Yeah.
That I know that it's difficult for MLB to like promote that storyline of look at how much pre-arb guys are underpaid. Woo! Right. But even like for Alec Bohm, who's making, I think, $4 million an arb, like a million would be.
We know Gunnar Henderson will make a lot more money one day, but yeah. No, it is definitely significant.
Who you got? Who do you got?
I'm going to take Pete.
Okay.
I think Pete I think he's like, we ain't losing again. I think Pete's going to find a way.
He brought back pitching machine Dave Joust.
Yes. And keep an eye on Teoscar. I'm really, really excited to watch Teoscar. I'm really excited and just happy for how his season has gone. And I think that one is really, really cool. So Bob, I'm taking Pete.
Give me Bob. Give me Bob Witt Jr. I think we are sleeping on this guy's power because it plays a Kauffman. I think he has 15 home runs going into the break. If he played his games at Dodger Stadium, I think he would have 25 home runs, right? I don't roll your eyes at me. I looked at the Statcast. Okay, I went
25.
On Savant.
That's all right. I'm really like,
please
wow.
Fact check me.
I will. You closed your computer. So he has 16 home runs going into the break.
Yep.
Wow, 26 home runs. That means that is wild.
If he had been at Dodger Stadium.
If he had been playing, yes.
Every game.
That's 29 in Cincinnati.
But this is my point. Like, if you look at these other parks,
yeah.
I think Kauffman is the lowest for his home run profile.
Yes.
Like, he's literally playing in the worst possible park for him. So what that means is, I know he's playing half his games on the road, duh. But, like, that just means that his power is better than we think, and I think he's going to surprise some people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people are underrated. You just mean based on the home run total. That's fair.
Well, and that, like, when you think about Bobby Witt Jr., the conversation with him is he can do everything. Mm-hmm. He can do everything. He's, like, one of the fastest players. Sorry. He is the fastest player in the league and a really good shortstop defender and hits for a high average. But he also has, like, 70 grade raw juice.
Yeah. No, and he has, if you sort by farthest home runs of the season hit by these eight players.
He's one and two.
He's one and two. So,
that's, I think, the point I'm trying to get across, right, is if I ask you who of the people in the Derby has this home run this year, you would probably say Ozuna or Garcia, right? These big old boys.
Yeah.
But the shortstop who's got 80 speed is the one with the furthest home run.
What also hurts Bobby is his swing and, like, him getting out of the box quick. He's not one that's launching it
and looking,
well, you know, one hand finish and just standing there. It's the opposite, and so, like, that fools you into thinking that he's, like, hitting wall scrapers and, you know, booking it.
So
that is an interesting dynamic, but no, I think obviously, you know, with him, with the hometown narrative as well, it's he's a great pick.
And his brother-in-law is pitching to him, which I think is adorable. Former big league pitcher James Russell, who's his brother-in-law, who played for the Cubs. Like, he's going to be throwing in the Derby.
James Russell.
I think that's kind of an iffy pick, personally, because it's like, how much has this guy thrown BP to you? Not going with your dad, who is the former big leaguer, who has thrown more BP to you than anyone has maybe ever thrown BP to anybody.
Wanted a lefty.
Is that what he said?
I'm just guessing. I don't know, right? Russell, lefty. I don't know. I mean, right, because wasn't his dad?
He's concocting himself a platoon split.
Right. So I don't know. I've wondered about that in terms of, like, BP pitchers, and I keep an eye on that tonight. Because we talk all the time about the Derby pitchers and the strategy involving that. But yeah, I wonder if that comes into play there. Also, the notion of, like, a recent big league pitcher pitching BP is also interesting.
James Russell, I believe his last year was 2016.
Yes.
Good job, Jake. You're an absolute sicko. That's enough podcast for today. Yeah.
Jake remembers when James Russell had an 1869 ERA in seven games for the 2016 Phillies. Everyone remembers that. All right, that's it. The Home Run Derby is tonight. We got All-Star Media Day this afternoon, so obviously a lot of stuff coming out of that. More draft happening. I'm excited to try and follow that while I'm trying to talk to all stars.
I think for the Yankees fans, we should just combine their agita and ask Ben Hess about Clay Holmes and Clay Holmes about Ben Hess. Clay Holmes, who's going to be here.
Listen, Bryce Cunningham, changeup's great, but he allowed a lot of home runs.
What do you think, Clay?
Are you concerned?
Soto.
Honestly, if I'm Clay Holmes, I would love to be talk asked about that. The draft.
Yeah, I mean, he probably hasn't watched a whole lot of video of Ben Hess.
Yeah, but I'd
Alabama guy though.
Yeah, and I'd rather answer questions about something I don't know than answer questions about what just happened yesterday.
That is a great point. Oh, hey, Juan Soto, I know everyone wants to know what you're going to do in free agency, but what do you think the Yankees can do on day two?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you like Damon Oppenheimer's draft strategy?
Who are we going after? All right, that's it. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. We've gotten a lot of emails asking us, are you doing a live event in Fort Worth or anything?
Yeah, we are. It's just in a closed room at a podcast studio.
Yes. And also, like,
this is live.
We are around. We've had some very nice folks who listen to the podcast say hello. If you see us, please say hi. Come bother us. We will say hi because we are not doing anything official, but we would love to meet you. So thank you all for listening. We appreciate the support. Back on Wednesday after the All-Star game and David Fry winning the MVP. Goodbye.